Welcome back to the Cheap Heat Productions podcast. Okay, welcome back to the show. And as you can see on the screens, we have someone, a returning guest. It's former NWA, WCW, and WWF wrestler, Mr. Randy Hogan. How are you today, man?
Hi, wonderful. It's so glad to be back here. Or I should say back there in Ireland, across the pond. Just excited to talk to your fans and spread the randomania across the world, brother.
Yeah, welcome back. I really enjoyed the last time with yourself and Mach. So I said, I've had him on the show previously by himself. So I said it was nice to get you on as well and go through your kind of career with you from a kind of a broader perspective.
Sure.
Right. First question is,
okay,
when did you decide that you wanted to be a pro wrestler?
Probably 1983. Maybe 1984. Okay. Starting off, I didn't want to be a pro wrestler. I wanted to know what was real and what was fake, as they say. Been a fan since I was 6, 7, 8 years old. So I went to a wrestling school and went through it and learned what I wanted to know about the business. And that was it. So then I waited another 13 months and finally got in the ring again. And by then, I don't know, I just got hooked. That's when I wanted to be a wrestler.
Were you surprised when you went into the business how physical and tall and it can be on your body?
Yes. I think your average fan thinks it's a lot of acrobatics that is choreographed and we practice and we're falling on a waterbed type of a cushion on the mat, and the mat and the ring ropes are nice and soft and they kind of bounce you off. It's nothing like that. You know, a wrestling ring is basically a steel frame, and they have, most of them have plywood boards. And then on top of the plywood, they would have like a gym mat, which is maybe 2 inches thick or whatever. And that's it. There's no springs or anything. So when you hit, when you bounce, whatever, the wood gives a little bit, but it's not like you have shock absorbers underneath it. Sometimes they will put support, because if you've got a 400-pound guy, like in the old days, a Bam Bam Bigelow, coming off the top rope, you know, he would break those boards. So there has to be something to cushion it a little bit. So they had just like supports under there. When you get thrown over the top rope onto the floor, in the old days, they didn't even have any little gym mats to fall on. You fell on cement, some of the concrete, or if you were outside, you fell in the dirt, whatever. But it was hard, so. As far as injuries, everybody's injured. We were at a convention a couple months ago when I was talking to Ricky Morton from the Rock and Roll Express. And we said, look at these guys. And we looked at all the guys our age, and we all walk the same. Everybody kind of hobbles and scoots and everything else. Backs erect, necks, knees, everything else. But that's all at the cost of that playtime wrestling, as some people think it is.
Yeah. What kind of injuries have you experienced throughout your career?
I've had, I broke my clavicle, or split it.
Yeah.
I've had both knees replaced. In September, I had an ankle replaced. And right now, at this very time, I got a walker. Wow. I have to walk on a walker. The 1st of December, I'm going to get surgery on my neck, cervical stenosis, I think they call it. I've got 4 bulging discs there. and my hips, again, all this from wrestling, are filled with arthritis and pinched nerves, which is starting to pinch on the spinal column. So anyways, they're going to go in the front of the neck and the back of the neck and do whatever they do, put in spacers and things like that and in my back. So the lucky part in my neck is the C, I think, 2, 3, 4, and 5, the vertebrae, are the 2 is below the part that turns this way, and the 5 is above the part that goes this way. So even if they fuse it, I'm still going to have movement. That motion. But, you know, Kurt Angle had that done. Stone Cold Steve Austin had that done. I forget other guys. So just a matter of getting it fixed. But what it does now is all the nerves are pinched. And the motor part of your brain, the nerves, are not talking to the bottom half of my body. So I have to kind of shuffle and be careful. My balance is off in that. So I'm going to get it fixed because there's always one more match, brother.
Would you get in the ring for one more match?
You know I would. I would absolutely, do it right yeah. now as gimpy as I am, you know. Absolutely. That's what I'm hoping to do. That's why I'm going to go through this surgery. Now, it sounds like a big major surgery, and it is, but the recoup time is only about 2 months or so, as opposed to a knee replacement or something else. Marty Jannetty, I think, just had an ankle replaced. Same thing. So after 2 or 3 months, and I'm looking at maybe April or May, which is the height of the convention season, maybe I can do more and some, not only just make an appearance and sit behind a table and take pictures, but actually get up in some of these indie shows, maybe get in the ring. I might have to drop the leg a couple more times, brother. You never know what's going to happen, but that's what's going to happen. And all that has been at the cost and the love of pro wrestling.
Would you take any of it back?
Would I take any of it back? No, I would take things that I didn't do. I would do, you know, just maybe take certain things more seriously, maybe really get involved in more things other than just getting through a basic match in that. I would have tried to be more creative. I would have put my brain into it a little bit more. But by the time I got into it and I was doing what I was doing, you know, you always learn a little bit along the line. But that's the only thing I regret is not taking it more serious in the beginning.
Yeah. Do you remember who your first match was against and where it was?
It was in Plant City, Florida. A big old guy called the Executioner. That was my first match. I could do very little against him, you know, a couple of drop kicks and a couple of headlocks and things, but he was this big and he was pushing 400 pounds, so obviously I couldn't lift him up or do a whole lot. So, but that was my first match.
Yeah,
that's the first thing that kind of got me hooked.
Before you went to NWA and WCW, did you do a lot of territory work?
Yes, I did. Most of it was in Florida and Georgia.
Yeah. What was that like?
That was a learning experience. That's where you really cut your teeth on the business, is the indie. Because you can be what you want. You can experiment and try different things. And if it doesn't look real good, it's not like you're on TV or SummerSlam in front of 50-some thousand people in there. There's just, even in the indie rings, there's such a camaraderie of the guys, and everybody, even on the little lowest level, is helping the next guy, his new buddy, to get on the next show and to introduce him to this promoter and that promoter. And that's how we get going, and we learn. It's a being on the road doing the indie thing is it's school. You're still in school. You're still learning. You're still trying different things. You're still making mistakes. That's probably where a lot of the injuries come up, not the major ones, but the ones that 40 years later, like me, you start feeling them. I feel those full bumps, those first bumps I took. I feel them right now.
Yeah, it seems like when we're touching on indies and territories and stuff like that, it seems like there's kind of a rebirth going on in America at the moment. Because I was talking to Al Snow on the podcast there last week, and he was
He's
talking
so
about his.
knowledgeable, isn't he? He is so
Yeah,
smart.
he gave me I pretty much I got Al on, and I didn't do the whole bullshit of talking about Al with the head and stuff like that. We talked
Yeah.
about his school, man, and that's what he wants to talk about. You know, he's passionate about it. And he
Yes.
came out with some really, really good stuff. When the episode is out, I'll send it to you. But like, he's got such a brain for the business. But we were talking about the fact that like the independents in America, they're all rising again.
Every city's got two or three things going. There's almost too many now. Okay. Some are like affiliated, like, well, say Al, his school. You know, once a guy is ready, he's not going to send him to WWE. He's going to send him on some of the quality indie shows, not the backyard shows, you know, where guys are jumping off the top of the house, you know, through seven tables and some fluorescent light bulbs and all that kind of stuff. Al teaches them old school wrestling mixed in with the new. We have a guy down here in Tampa, Frankie Reyes, that does the same thing. He's a little protege of the old Boris Malenko, which has a very good reputation down here. Dean Malenko, his son, is I think still with WWE as an agent, but they are they're teaching and training the old things, and they're getting into more and more of the little territory type. Show little shows, territories as we called it, but there's still a lot of them that shouldn't be there. But there's just almost too many of them right now. Quality ones, no.
Al said to me that the one thing that he doesn't allow in his wrestling school is for people to drop other people on the apron outside the ring, because he said there's no giving it. It's too hard. You can seriously hurt yourself. What's your opinions on that?
Well, yeah, that's where the
Just on the outside of the ropes.
Frame is, yes, right outside the rings. You've got about, oh, I don't know, maybe 12, 15 inches out. That is the steel frame of the ring. And yeah, there is no give to that. That is just solid, hard stuff. So even on TV, when you see a guy taking a bump on that, boy, that hurts. Because you don't have a heavy pad there, because the pad on the ring, the construction is pulled, and it's like a bedspread. It's pulled and stretched over the end. So when you get on the corner of that, on the outside of the ring, and just maybe 6 inches inside, there's not even any padding, much less that steel beam that doesn't move. So that's protecting his boys right there. You always want to drop in the center of the ring or close to it as possible. You will see guys doing power slams or whatever, walking around the ring, but they always drop the guy in the middle of the ring. You know, hopefully not much by the ropes because that's where the flexibility is.
When you were working in WCW and you were on television, what was that experience like for you?
Well, it's very hard to explain. I mean, to go from working in front of 25, 30, 40 people on these little indie shows, all of a sudden you walk in the locker room and all your heroes are there. Oh my God, there's Terry Funk, there's Ricky Steamboat, there's Flair, you know, there's Dusty Rhodes, there's all these guys in there. And you get matched up wherever your match is. You know, they have a sheet on the wall that's come out and they pin, and that's how you know who you're gonna work. So you walk out, and if it's TV in the studio, you walk out, and it's just you feel like you're on TV. It's very intimidating, and I can't tell you the feeling of walking out of an arena, walking down the aisle, as Ric Flair says, in front of, in my case, I think the largest one I did was about 18,000 people wrestling in front, and you walk into the ring, and people, some of them are cheering and rooting you on, some are booing you and everything. But you look up in the crowd, up in the rafters, and you're looking at like 15, 18,000 people. It's like you're floating. You don't even know it. You're not conscious of anything. Then you step up into the ring and you look around and they announce your name and you think, God, am I really here? And then once you step in the ring and you lock up with your opponent, that all goes away. You forget about the crowd. You forget about where you're at. Your brain just kicks into like three different gears. One before you go out, one when you walk the aisle and get in the ring, and then another one once you lock up and do the match. But it's an indescribable feeling. You know, it's not an egotistical thing. It's a scary thing. But so exciting. And when you're done, you just want to get up. Yes, you know?
Yeah, adrenaline.
Oh, so exciting. So exciting. And then you calm down a little bit as you're changing in the locker room and everything. And you just thank God how lucky you are to be living a dream, to have 20,000 people out there looking at you. Even if you're not the star, you're there. You're on TV, you know. Of all the thousands and thousands of great quality independent workers, you know, some of us just got lucky at the right time, mm-hmm. and made it. And what a proud feeling, you know. My parents are proud, my daughter's proud, my friends, everybody's proud. It doesn't matter that Vader is squashing me or the Road Warriors are chopping me with it feels like a 2x4. Or Abdul the Butcher's dropping that flying lead across my neck. Didn't matter. You know, yeah. I was there. So people now that have memes and kind of try to make fun of the jobbers, the me and Barry Horowitz's of the world and everything. You know, we were there and you're paying tickets to watch us. And yep. We used to say, and your girlfriends want us.
Very good. What was Abdullah the Butcher like? Because there's a conception about him, and I've obviously seen what happened with him controversially in the past, you know, when he bladed with Hannibal and stuff like that.
Yes.
What's he like as a person?
I worked him twice. Once I had very little communication with him. I mean, I just pretty much walked to the ring and let him do his thing. The second one, Gary Hart was managing him at the time. Yeah. And went in, did the match, and he's old school. I mean, he's stiff, as they say, you know?
Yeah.
He chops you when he hits you, when he stands on you, when he kicks you, when he hits you in the hell head with the buckle part of the belt, you know? He doesn't cushion it with his hand or anything. He just comes across and slams you. He is tough. He is mean. Everything that you think about him, he is in the ring.
Yeah.
I tell just a little story. He beat me with a kendo stick one time outside the ring. It was a 3-hour TV taping, and I wrestled him the first hour. I had another match the third hour against Hacksaw Butch Reed. And Butch Reed got me up in a bear hug, you know, and TV cameras got it. And you could see all these red welts across my back where he whipped me like a dog. So it was after that, I went back in the locker room, and he was back there with his feet up on a desk, smoking a cigar. And again, common courtesy, no matter how much you get hurt or whatever else, you go up and you thank your opponent. Thank you for the match. Thanks for the work. You know, so I went up to him. Thanks for the match. He says, "Are you okay?" I says, "Yeah." I says, "But you about beat me to death with that kendo stick." He's smoking a cigar. And he says, "Kid, it's good for the business." And I thought about that. Now, when he was doing it, for the most part, we were outside the ring, right mm-hmm. in front of the fans. You can't pull punches. You can't pull hitting somebody with a stick or whatever else. You got to hit them. I mean, you know, you're 3 feet away from people. If you miss a punch or you pull something or you don't quite hit them, it looks fake. And that's what the keyboard warriors love to play on and to talk about and stuff. Old school, like he said, and it's good for the business, which means make it look real. You know, and he did. So I think that's where his reputation come from. I think that's where Vader got a lot of his reputation the same mm-hmm. way. They were old school. They were tough. They worked a lot in Japan, which, you know, a lot of people know Japan is just straight out tough. Yeah. That's it. I mean, they are rough, you know. So Otherwise, Abdul, that was the communication. He gave me probably the best advice I ever got. It's good for the business. Make it look real. Make it real if you have to.
Yeah. Who was your favorite opponent that you ever faced across promotions? Someone that you had chemistry with, that you feel, or just someone that you enjoyed being in the ring with?
The most enjoyable I had was probably with Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express. It seems like I wrestled them a zillion times, and they would try different things out on me, different holds. And I was lucky because when you're trained correctly, like Al Banky, you learn how to fall correctly. You're almost like a cat. No matter where you're going, you get yourself in position. And that has to be taught. So I was about 230 pounds at the time. So these big, strong guys like the Road Warriors and Vader, you know, they could throw me around like a rag doll, which they did. And I didn't care. So they liked to work with me. But I seemed to always get the Midnight Express because they knew that I wasn't going to cry and whine. They'd do it. I had a good match with Barry Windham. Again, wonderful guy. Fun to work. The most fun match I ever had was against the Junkyard Dog. He's in the ring, and he'll have you in a headlock or a face, and he's like cracking jokes the whole time. You know, you're sitting down, and he gets you and everything, and he says, yeah, look at that one in the front row. And he's just cracking jokes the whole time. And he says, okay, brother, here comes the thump. Here comes the thump, which is what he called his power slam, you know, his finishing move. The thump. He's like, here comes the thump. Here comes the thump. Okay, got it. But he was cracking jokes the whole time. So he was the funniest one. Barry Windham just never got his dues, and I don't know why. He should have been a world champion. Midnight Express were absolute smooth, talented, fun to watch, and Jimmy Cornette was just the cherry on top of that sundae.
Yeah, very good. It's kind of chemistry, isn't it, from working together so often?
It is. Especially when they were doing using enhancement jobbers, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but it all works.
Yeah, you get, like you said, that chemistry, and they know what they can do with you and what they can't, and what liberties they can take and they shouldn't. So they're comfortable with you. And that's job security for the jobbers.
Yeah. If we fast forward all these years then to today and even to the last couple of years, and the way you look now, like you've always had the mustache, but the red and the yellow and stuff like that, and the Hogan persona.
I had the Mania shirts today. I just wore.
Lovely.
There you go. That's the Hogan shirt right there.
How did this persona become what it is?
Come where it is from a vendor, Kevin Nesta. Okay, from Damage 365. He's big. He runs a great show. He brings a lot of new talent in. Anyways, after 20-some years of doing absolutely nothing, I get a phone call out of the blue. Mm-hmm. Kevin asked, hey, do you want to do a convention? Well, I'd never been to a convention. I didn't even know what a convention was. I never went to a Comic-Con or any of those things.
Yeah.
So I said, well, talk to me. So he explained to me what it is and everything. And I said, well, God, that kind of sounds like fun. So we went back and forth. And I said, yeah, I'll do it. That was the big event in New York 2 years ago. And he says, do you do the Hogan gimmick, as he called it, which I never did. I was always Randy Hogan, always had the look, but I had turquoise trunks and boots, a black velvet robe with a matching turquoise silk lining and everything. And I was just Randy Hogan. Wasn't his brother, his cousin, an impersonator? I wasn't none of that stuff. Kevin says, can you do this Hogan thing? I said, well, I'll do whatever you want, you know, like the old jobbing days, pin me, pay me. As long as you're going to pay me, I'll do whatever you want at this convention. So I went out, and luckily one of my best friends has a printing shop and does T-shirts there.
Yeah.
So he designed the Randomania T-shirt, which was, of course, a takeoff on the Hulkamania.
Yeah.
So I had them made, and I still sell them in red, yellow, black. I've got the NWO in black. type t-shirt, which is HW, Hogan's World Order, and it's got a signature underneath it. That's my favorite. But so I've got those on. I keep changing shirts and gimmicks and everything. Today is the red and the yellow. Another day might be the yellow with the red. So I did. So I went online and I bought some bandana skull caps, as they call them. I bought some glasses in yellow, red, black, white, and royal blue, which I still sell on my Randy Hogan Stuff website. So that's how it all started, through Kevin Nasta. He said, can you do this? And I said, I did it. I took my boots, my famous boots. I've only had one pair my whole life. Mm-hmm. And I had them dyed from turquoise to yellow. They look like that. So I got the red and yellow tie-dyed tights, my yellow boots, changed the shirt. I have a yellow and a black weightlifting belt that I wear around it that's got Randomania written on the back. So that's how it started 2 years ago, and I just kept it, and it got kind of popular. People like that. They said, you know, they make fun of me. Well, this is the generic brand Hulk Hogan. I don't care. I don't claim to be any of that stuff. I'm just Randy Hogan. You know, the fact is I'm older, and he looks like me. I can't help that. It's his fault. Go after him.
We touched on the last podcast that you and Hulk are on good terms over all this and everything like that. What I want to know is, if you're going to the grocery store today and you're dressed like this, how often do people think you're Hulk Hogan?
Occasionally, they think I'm Hulk Hogan. Mm-hmm. In most cases,
with the masks, would they probably think you look like Hulk more?
Well, because
they
can't see your face. I'm just a normal bald-headed guy, you know?
Yeah.
But my wife always cracks up. We went to the airport to convention. Just got out of the little shuttle that took us from our car to the gate. Just got out, and this group of about four women said, can we have a picture with you? I don't know if they think I'm Hulk or whatever, and of course, sure. So I get a lot of that when I'm dressed in gimmick, and sometimes for fun, I'll put this on, you know, and walk around, and people look and they think, some of them remember Randy Hogan, but most of them say, hey, you look like Hulk Hogan. And I say, no, he looks like me because I'm older and I was here first. And that is the God's honest truth.
Yes. I'd say that gets a good reaction out of people.
It does. Yeah. But it's the truth. I always tell the truth.
Yeah. What was I going to touch on next? Oh, yeah. You were saying that if the opportunity arises, that you would get back in the ring again. But what I want to touch on is conventions and stuff like that we touched on the last episode. And just like how crazy it is like that, you know, for guys like you that were in the 80s and the 90s and all, is it good to be meeting up with all these guys again and going to these places and just meeting up and say, the boys, we're all here?
You know, it's funny because we had a convention not too long ago, and Scott Steiner, who I wrestled, beat me to death, was right across from us. You know, I didn't go out and see or talk to him, nothing else. So I walked across, shook his hand. You know, I said, you know, thanks for kicking my ass, whatever. And he was really, really nice, really tough. But it's fun to now, 25 or years later, go up with some of these people that are doing the conventions that I worked against and just reconnect with them. Say, yeah, you beat me up here, or you did this here, or you let me do this. You know, you thank them for the opportunities they gave me and everything. Most of them are very nice. And everything. Yeah. So reconnecting with the old boys is wonderful. It's as far as the fans go. You know, some of these conventions draw 2,000-3,000 people. And of course, they're all rushing to The Undertaker and Braun Strowman and those guys, you know, for $200 autographs and everything else. Then they walk by and say, hey, I remember you. Or do you do this or whatever? So they come to me, and instead of that $200 autograph, they get a picture, an autograph picture, and a selfie photo and everything else for like maybe 30 or 40 bucks, you know? So they like it. They want to get their picture taken with you. A lot of the people who are really in the history of wrestling and know some of the old guys, especially the jobbers that were on every week, like me and Barry Horowitz, George South, guys like that, they want to connect with us, and then they want to get a picture of that. And we get to talk to them, and they say, you know, did you really get hurt when you wrestled this guy or whatever else? They want to know little stories and stuff. And I always take the time to do that. You know, I'm just so appreciative of what they do for me.
You can give them more of a personal experience than 10 seconds with The Undertaker.
I give them all the time they want.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you go to the doctor, you got a 3 o'clock appointment, it's 3:30 and you're still waiting. Well, that's because the doctor took time with his patients because he appreciates them, wants to give them what they want. Mm-hmm. It's the same with us. If you got to wait a couple seconds because I'm explaining a story or a move or something else to another fan, they don't mind because they know I'm going to take the same time with them. Mm-hmm. Plus, you're right. I have more time because I don't have the long lines, you know, going out the building, unfortunately. I'm just a little Randy Hogan, you know, just a little guy who used to get beat up on TV and they want to talk to me and get a picture with me. And I enjoy interacting back and forth with them. So that's pretty much what we do at the conventions.
Yeah, I think you have a great attitude towards the business and towards what you've done in the business. Like, you don't sugarcoat it. You just say, this is what I've done. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm fucking proud of being on television.
That's true. I am proud. Many people, of course, it's different now. Back then when you had all the different territories, you had a lot more television, quality television and shows. With the NWA, and you know, which was lately the WCW, and you had World Class with the Von Erichs running that out there. You had Vern Gagne and his AWA up in Minnesota, and down here you had Gordon Soley and Florida Championship Wrestling, Eddie Graham, and then you had Bill Watts and that. So you had all these quality territories that had television. So it was easier to get on back then. Well, now, you know, there's a lot of shows, and I don't go for any of the internet shows, whatever. Mm-hmm. To me, wrestling is on major television. So you got AEW, you got NXT, you got WWE's SmackDown and Raw, and that's about it. But you figure WWE's got two nights, AEW's got two, soon to be three nights, you know, on major TV. So back in the day, you could go from the territories, and if you were lucky, like me, you got on the mainstream TV, which was WTBS, that was worldwide. So I get a lot of fans simply because of that, and they don't have the opportunities now. So, and I was just at the right place, the right time. I got an opportunity that I'm so thankful for.
Yeah,
had nothing to do with talent or politics or anything else. So,
Before we wrap up, Randy, I want to know, and people might want to know out there, where can we get your merchandise and things like that?
You know, it's so simple. If you want Randy Hogan stuff, you go on Facebook and you go to Randy Hogan Stuff. That's what it is.
It's the group on Facebook, yeah.
That's it on Facebook, Randy Hogan Stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've got different specials, different things I try to put on every week. But I've got shirts, like I said, Randomania shirts in the classic yellow or red or black or royal blue. I've got the HWO black shirt. I've got matching bandanas, sunglasses. I've got boots that I signed both in yellow and red. I've got from Hanging and Banging, brother, the Hulk, I've got little dumbbells. You know, they're 2 pound dumbbells that I autograph the handle. So I've got those. I've got keychains. I've got trading cards. I've got 13 different 8x10 different pictures available. All kinds of stuff on Randy Hogan Stuff. And you can reach me direct message me anytime I'm on there. I answer. I take my time. I'll talk to you anytime. I'll friend you. I'll be your friend, brother. I'll make you a Randomaniac so you can run wild with me and the Macho Man 2.0 coming up real soon in a town near you, brother.
Randy, I can testify to all that, and you've been writing to people, and you're nice enough to write back to me, and organize this. And thanks for your time today, man. I think we're going to have to get you on again.
Do it. I got so much to talk about.
Brilliant.
And you have a great show. Again, international, worldwide. You're making me an international superstar, brother. That's it. The number one podcast in the whole Randomania stratosphere is right here with Chief Heat, brother. Right here it is.